Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc, and for Joe Donahue, it's our favorite time of the week. It's book picks time. Amy Lane is here. Amy Lane is here from the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York, with a great list of titles to share. Amy, good morning. It's great to see you.
Good morning, Sarah. Good to see you, too.
Where do you want to begin?
I think I'm going to begin with Hilary Mantel's latest book, Bringing Up the Bodies, which is her follow-up to the best-selling Wolf Hall, and I believe it was the Orange Prize winning, or Booker Prize. I'm sorry, I don't remember. Isn't
That's
that
okay.
terrible of me? This is the second in her trilogy of Thomas Cromwell, who was the chief minister to Henry VIII. This focuses mostly on the life and then death of Anne Boleyn. It's
no drama there.
No drama, none at all. It's very, very dry. No, not at all.
Absolutely
it's,
not.
It's actually really fascinating read, of course, chock full of historical details, et cetera, but she makes everything sort of lively and intriguing and interesting and very, historically accurate, but meaty. And this one in particular, even though it is the second in a trilogy, can stand alone. You don't need to have read Wolf Hall, which actually Wolf Hall spanned a much longer period of time mm-hmm. of Thomas Cromwell. And this is a very, very short period of time. It's maybe 9 months, and it focuses particularly, again, on sort of the rise and fall of Anne Boleyn. So that's my first.
It's the second of the trilogy. Do you know when the third is due?
I don't know when the third is due, but probably not for a little while since this one just came out.
That is Bringing Up the Bodies by Hilary Mantel.
The next one that I want to talk about is, this one kills me. This is an amazing, amazing story and so well told. And it's Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail by Cheryl Strayed. And this recently hit the bestseller list of the New York Times bestseller, and rightly so. I think this is one of those, I think it could be compared to one of those spiritual journeys sort of along the Eat, Pray, Love, but a much, much deeper, more profound, in my opinion. It's edgy. It's raw. It is so real. I mean, this is something, in my opinion, that is just raw and visceral in a way that I don't think Eat, Pray, Love was. That was a little more heady and esoteric, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this, she's not out to prove that she's found any answers, despite the fact that it's lost and found on the Pacific Crest Trail, because I think ultimately what it questions is, let me backtrack for a second.
Sure.
Her mother died at the age of 45 from, like, lung cancer,
mm-hmm.
stage 4 lung cancer, and it was diagnosed, and she died within, like, a 2-week, a very short time frame.
Right.
And Cheryl was 22 when that happened. And she was just crippled and crushed by the grief, and she spiraled down, of course, as one is wont to do, and decided to take this trek, this 1,000-mile-long beyond trek from the California to Oregon and or Washington. And really, it's just what you do in the face of grief and how one deals with a loss of faith, if she ever really had any in the first place. What do you do? And it's, you just kind of keep moving, right? You take that next step. And it just blew me away, what I've read of it. And it's harrowing, it's hard, and it's brilliant and breathtaking and heartbreaking and uplifting and all that you want. And she is so real. So I love her.
Has she written anything before?
She is part of, the Rumpus. She's like Ask Sugar or something like that. I can't remember that part of it. But this is really her second, I think, book. And she wrote this, I mean, it's like 20 years past, so
yeah.
She sat with this for a long time before, you know, going back and revisiting it.
Putting it on the paper.
Yeah.
That's Cheryl Strayed. The book is called Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail.
Next is the new John Irving. In One Person is what it's called. And this, I really love this description of the book, this by Abraham Verghese, who wrote Cutting for Stone.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've seen this quote of his, but
he
is a lovely writer. And and he writes a lovely comment about this. So let me read this to you again. This is from Abraham Verghese. And it's, this tender exploration of nascent desire, of love and loss, manages to be sweeping, Brilliant, political, provocative, tragic, and funny, it is precisely the kind of astonishing alchemy we associate with a John Irving novel. And then he continues, "The unfolding of the AIDS epidemic in the United States in the 80s was the defining moment for me as a physician. With my patients' deaths almost always occurring in the prime of life, I would find myself cataloging the other losses, namely what these people might have offered society had they lived the full measure of their days, their art, their literature, the children they might have raised. This book, In One Person, is the novel that, for me, will define that era. A profound truth is arrived at in these pages. It is Irving at his most daring, at his most ambitious. It is America and American writing, both at their very best." And it's a lovely quote.
Mm-hmm. And, absolutely.
And he does bring up the issues of AIDS, but it's also about desire. It, I think, is really at the heart and crux, and it's really expressed quite simply in the very first paragraph of the book, and it is that we are formed by what we desire. And it's fascinating, interesting, captivating read, and well worth taking a look at.
It's John Irving's latest, In One Person.
Next is another novel, which is just released. It's called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk by Ben Fountain. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but it's amazing. It's been compared to Catch-22, mm-hmm. right? And I think it's because it takes a look at war, and particularly our modern wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. This one focuses on Iraq. And it, unlike Catch-22, which focused on the sort of bureaucracy of war, This really focuses on the way we publicize it, right? How are we going to get it out there as something to rally behind,
right. And
how that works. And so so the premise of the novel is that this Bravo company is in Iraq, and they're in a firefight with Iraqi insurgents, and it's all caught on film by a Fox News crew. And so because the drop-off in American interest in the wars is so significant, the Bush administration has decided to take these surviving members of what they call the Bravo Squad and send them home on a victory tour on Thanksgiving Day. Is what the whole book takes place in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wind up in Texas going to a Dallas Cowboys football game and meeting the cheerleaders and Americans along the way. And it's a romp, it's a riot, it's really profound in some ways, and it speaks quite well to what it is that we perceive and how we salute these soldiers, I suppose, who are fighting for us, and how our country has corrupted or exploited that. It's fascinating and fun.
It sounds very interesting.
It is, very.
It's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk by Ben Fountain.
Next is something completely different. it is a book that I don't know if many people have heard about, but it's called Engines of Change, A History of the American Dream in 15 Cars by Paul Ingracia. This is really cool. I think it's a very accessible, and even if you're not really a full-fledged car person, or if you know someone who, even in the periphery, likes car, it really does take the idea of car culture and how it reflects the larger American culture and our pop culture.
Sure.
Right? And he makes this point right in the beginning about how, you know, we have a lot of pop culture references to cars and what happens in cars. We've got songs, right, about cars.
Songs, yep. They're prominently featured in movies. And I'm thinking DeLorean currently.
Yes, of course. Yes, and that actually is one of the books that is mentioned, one of the 15.
That's great.
Along with, of course, the Model T, the Volkswagen Beetle, the microbus, mm-hmm. as well. The Chevy Corvair, which that whole thing brings on the idea of the lawsuits, right? That was one of the first ones and of course that was helped by Ralph Nader. It's a really fascinating, interesting history of the American car and how it reflects who we are.
Engines of Change is a History of the American Dream in 15 Cars by Paul Ingracia.
Okay, and then the last one I'm going to talk about right now is Pinstripe Empire, The New York Yankees from Before the Babe to After the Boss by Marty Appel, who had worked in the 70s as one in their PR office. Totally awesome. Completely riveting, engaging history from its beginnings to its current you know, crew and organization and how it's changed and how it really is a dynasty. And it's, again, something that is so readable. You can sit down. It's a huge book. It's over 500 pages long. But
there's a lot of history
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel it at all. It goes by in a flash, and it's a lot of fun.
Are you a Yankee fan?
I like the Yankees. I would not call myself a fan. Because I think fans tend to be a little more diehard than I am. But yeah, I root for the Yankees.
Pinstripe Empire, The New York Yankees from Before the Babe to After the Boss by Marty Appel. The Open Door Bookstore is on J Street in Schenectady, New York. Their website, opendoor-bookstore.com, opendoor-bookstore.com. Amy, thank you, as always,
thank
for coming
you.
In and sharing your suggestions with our listeners. Fantastic list.
Good to be here.
We post each week's book picks online at wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.